Schiff was down in his Black Sea vacation resort. His Kremlin comrades secretly met, took a vote, and called Khrushchev back to Moscow, and they fired him.
The ouster of the leader of the communist world was just one of the major stories of the year 1964. It's just one of the stories you will hear in sound and voice when this station presents 1964 in Review.
Every worker and every block in the land, to the people of both parties, and to especially to you good people who made it possible, I say thank you.
The election in the United States was just one of the major stories of the year. 1964, a year of change, will be reviewed in sound and voice when this station presents 1964 in Review. This is Pye Chamberlain with the sounds and voices that made news in the past year. A review of 1964 by United Press International. The world changed in 1964 as it must each year. And each year the change is brought home by the disappearance of familiar voices.
Товарищи. Вот, извините. Но есть и те, и другие, товарищи.
Mr. Khrushchev said comrades, but then said, that's a mistake.
Gone from the limelight of world politics is Nikita Sergeyevich Khrushchev. Gone from the stage of the presidential election campaign.
I won't change my beliefs to win votes.
Senator Barry Goldwater.
I will offer a choice, not an echo.
1964 stilled the voices of many world figures forever.
America is a land of self-respect.
The 31st President of the United States, Herbert Clark Hoover, died at the age of 90.
And self-respect is born alone of free men and free women.
Always there echoes and re-echoes.
General of the Army Douglas MacArthur.
Duty, honor, country.
And the originator of modern neutralism, Jawaharlal Nehru of India.
We have no desire to imitate or compete with any other country, but we are firmly resolved to raise the standards of our people and give them the opportunities to lead a good life.
Dead also in 1964, King Paul of Greece, Italian and French Communist Party bosses of a generation, Palmiro Togliatti and Maurice Thorez, Senator Claire Engel of California, authors Brendan Behan, Rachel Carlson, Ben Hecht, Sean O'Casey, composer Cole Porter, and forever missing from the screen and stage are Alan Ladd, Peter Lorre, Carol Haney, Harpo Marx, Eddie Cantor, and William Bendix. The great showman of the East, Nikita Khrushchev, is replaced by men of less color and vitality, the generation of clerks and technocrats. Khrushchev succeeded Georgi Malenkov as head of the Soviet Communist Party on March 14, 1953, just 9 days after Stalin's death. In 11 years, the gregarious commissar left his mark on the world. He turned the cowering Russian communists against Stalin, staged a gigantic firework of Sputniks and Luniks, set off multi-megaton nuclear tests, and agreed to a partial test ban. He pounded a shoe on his desk in the UN and split the communist bloc between Moscow and Peking. He attempted the most daring penetration into this hemisphere, then backed down in a global showdown before President Kennedy in the Cuban Missile Crisis. In May of 1964, Khrushchev announced that communism is actually a union of like-minded people. And in October, he promised greater allocations for the consumer industries. Thus, he antagonized both the power-hungry inner circle of the party and the heavy industry-oriented army. And so came the 15th of October. Dick Growald reports from Moscow.
Khrushchev was down at his Black Sea vacation resort. His Kremlin comrades secretly met, took a vote, and called Khrushchev back to Moscow, and they fired him. I remember his pitches coming down quicker than the autumn leaves. I remember how Russians suddenly turned cold and silent at the mention of his name. Oh, it had been the usual Moscow year. We had Khrushchev roaring at the Chinese communists early in 1964. He called Mao Zedong a dogmatist, an anti-Marxist, and raged against Peking's bid for world communist mastery and claims of Soviet Asian lands. The Chinese responded, calling Khrushchev a clown, a buffoon, a friend of the capitalists. Peking and Moscow were headed for the final split, but the world stopped for us in Moscow October the 14th. I remember best October 12th. The Russians had sent into orbit the world's first space passenger ship. Three men up there looping around the Earth. And Khrushchev promised the cosmonauts a Moscow welcome greater than the force of gravity. The cosmonauts got that welcome a week later. But Khrushchev wasn't there. His closest friends had been stripped of power. And other old comrades, Mikoyan, new party leader Leonid Brezhnev, and Premier Alexei Kosygin, are putting together a new regime. It's a new world in Moscow now. 1964 did that. This is Dick Growald in Moscow.
In the United States, it was a presidential election year, marked by the peaceful, if not quiet, transition from the Kennedy administration to one which Lyndon Johnson could rightfully call his own. We'll continue with the story of 1964 in a moment. For Lyndon Johnson's 1964 political success story, here is John Chambers in Washington. It took almost the entire year for Lyndon Johnson to emerge from the shadow John F. Kennedy left. But when the voters expressed their will, the president of transition was elected by the largest popular plurality in a century. In January, Johnson went before the Congress.
Let us carry forward the plans and programs of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Not because of our sorrow or sympathy, but because they are right.
Congress reversed a field block when Kennedy was leader and enacted controversial bill after bill. The tax cut went through in a matter of weeks. Education bills, snarled and personal frictions between aging legislators were oiled by a simple telephone call or two from the new president. Johnson called it the Education Congress. Finally, on July 2nd, the most controversial and perhaps the most significant piece of legislation to clear the 88th Congress, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, passed. First, a dogged Southern Senate filibuster was broken. Rights bill floor manager, Senator Hubert Humphrey, knew personal triumph.
It's a great day, it truly is. It's a day for sober rejoicing and for a sense of happiness in the nation.
Johnson also introduced a Kennedy idea the late president planned but did not have the opportunity to expand. The war on poverty, Johnson called it. It whistled through Congress as a major domestic aid program, but a related, purely Johnson measure, the Appalachia Bill, failed, as did the New Frontier concept, hospital care for the aged, financed under the Social Security system. It was Johnson's outstanding congressional defeat of the year. There was one domestic policy that was clearly President Johnson's: economizing. First, the president slashed the Kennedy budget. Then he turned out the lights at the White House. Lyndon Johnson never announced he was a candidate for the presidency of the United States. He just never let anyone forget it. For back in January, on his sunny Phoenix, Arizona patio, Barry Goldwater had announced,
"I want to tell you that I will seek the Republican presidential nomination. And I've decided to do this because of the principles in which I believe and because I'm convinced that millions of Americans share my belief in those principles."
Pennsylvania Governor William Scranton insisted,
I told you that I am not a candidate and do not wish to run.
And Governor Rockefeller of New York said,
I'm in this race all the way.
But in June, Rockefeller was defeated in the California primary. A week after that, Governor Scranton bid for the moderate liberal GOP leadership. He went before a split convention of Maryland Republicans in Baltimore and announced his candidacy.
The Republican Party is in danger, and some say our country may be too. They say that we're going to San Francisco to hold a convention, not a coronation. And I hope you... And I hope you agree that we're not going there to hold a wake.
But a month later, the heavily Goldwater Republican convention in San Francisco booed Scranton to defeat. To the discomfort of liberal and moderate Republicans, Senator Goldwater accepted GOP presidential nomination with this slogan.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The president waited until the humid nomination night of the Democratic Atlantic City Convention to announce his choice to his party.
I hope that you will choose as the next Vice President of the United States my close, my long time, my trusted colleague, Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota.
Humphrey promised a verbal barrage for Republican opponents Goldwater and Miller.
And my fellow Americans, most Democrats and most Republicans in the Senate voted to help the United Nations in its peacekeeping functions when it was in financial difficulty. But not Senator Goldwater.
Then up and down the land, President Johnson and Barry Goldwater attacked each other. In a single 24 hours, 2 weeks before Election Day, the tide seemed first to turn to Goldwater, then heavily to Johnson. White House aide Walter Jenkins was arrested on morals charges and hospitalized for nervous fatigue. Less than 24 hours after this was announced, the Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev fell from power and the communist Chinese exploded their first nuclear device. Candidate Johnson grabbed his presidential hat and spoke to the American people.
Until this week, only four powers had entered the dangerous world of nuclear explosions. Whatever their differences, all four are sober and serious states with long experience as major powers in the modern world. Communist China has no such experience.
Then November 4th, at 2:30 a.m. Central Time, it became official. The place, the Austin, Texas Civic Auditorium.
To every worker, to the people of both parties, I say thank you from...
Johnson's plurality was 61%, unique in this century. The new frontier became history, and the president, as he first promised in May in Ann Arbor, Michigan, pledged again to work for a great society. As the United States traveled through the new frontier into a great society, there were changes abroad, some violent, some peaceful, like this one reported by Don McKay in London.
It's time for a change. That was the big political slogan in Britain. After 13 years of Conservative Party rule, the Socialists took over Her Majesty's government. Many who feared that true blue Britain would suddenly become a shocking pink were pleasantly surprised. Under the Socialists, as under the Conservatives, Britain remained a firm member of NATO, a firm partner in the Anglo-American alliance.
We ask for no special relationship, but we hope to achieve a close relationship based on an identity of views, an identity of objectives, and a desire to work closely for everything that we want to see happening in the world.
Prime Minister Harold Wilson, a pipe-smoking middle-of-the-road sort, coolly but firmly set on the Socialist Party's small but noisy band of sentimental pacifists. Wilson was very much in charge of his party and his government. The Socialists squeaked into power with only a razor-thin parliamentary majority, and from the start, the Socialists were fought tooth and nail in Parliament by the opposition Conservatives. The possibility of another general election hung like a cloud on the British political horizon, perhaps an election in 1965, perhaps 1966. This is Don McKay reporting from London.
We'll return with Review 1964 in just a moment. In France, there was little change. General de Gaulle maintained his course of independent French policy, steering firmly through the antagonism of the United States and Great Britain. Paul Eve reports from Paris.
In a year put France nearer to the goal of world prestige that de Gaulle has set for her, left her with an even bigger balance of gold and dollar reserves, and certainly greatly strengthened economically and morally at home. When it became evident that Washington and Bonn, with or without the new Labour regime in Britain, were willing to go ahead with the American-sponsored multilateral nuclear force project, he chided Germany and began a top gear campaign to stop what he believed to be bad for France and Europe. For de Gaulle, the only viable nuclear force in Europe is a European one, or if you want, a French force leading other European powers. This is Paul Eve in Paris.
Across the border, Germany, East and West, and Berlin, communist and free, are waiting and working toward progress of their own, with varying results. Edward Shields reports from West Berlin.
The wall has remained the basic fact of life here, but this has been a year of lowered tension for West Berliners and slightly better living conditions for the 17 million East Germans still held by the communist regime. The communist agreement to open the wall for 4 2-week periods a year so West Berliners could visit their relatives in the East has improved the atmosphere here. But it also brought unprecedented criticism of West Berlin Mayor Willy Brandt because the West German government and the Western Allies felt the Paz Agreement made concessions to the communists. Erhard has been in difficulty himself, not only from Brandt's socialists, but also from a faction within his own party led by the aging but wily Adenauer. This faction accuses Erhard of sacrificing Germany's friendship with France to closer ties with the United States. The issue has crystallized around Erhard's determination that West Germany should join the American-sponsored multilateral nuclear force, while the Adenauer group favors an all-European force under Franco-German leadership. This is Edward Shields in Berlin.
1964 brought significant changes in the Roman Catholic Church. The traveling pontiff, Pope Paul VI, celebrating Mass in Jerusalem. With the story of a year of renovation for the church, William Sunderland in Vatican City.
Pope Paul VI had been on the throne of Peter only 6 months when 1964 began. But at the end of the year, he had become a traveling pontiff, or as he called himself, an apostle on the move. For Pope Paul, things got off to a fast start. He flew by jetliner to the Holy Land. There, as a pilgrim, he received a hysterical welcome from Christians and non-Christians alike. Then there was a trip to India to attend the Eucharistic Congress in Bombay. Aside from the new concept of a traveling pontiff, the Ecumenical Council was the most important event of the year for the Catholic Church. The 9-week third session moves swiftly ahead, debating and studying such crucial questions as the role of the Church in the modern world. Perhaps the most disappointing phase of the Council was its failure to complete work on two important documents dealing with religious liberty and Jews. Another sore point was birth control. Ecumenical Council speakers were ordered to keep their discussions to generalities, since in any case the final decision on possible change in the Church's ban on artificial contraception would have to come from the Pope himself. This is William Sunderland in the Vatican.
While the Pope's visit to Bombay made news, grim headlines were being forged across the Asian continent from Peking to Saigon. Robert Crabb reports from Tokyo.
1964 was the year of the dragon in Asia, and it was a big one for communist China. The news of end of the year in the Orient was China's successful atomic bomb explosion October 17. Scientific tests of the bomb's fallout indicated Chinese nuclear science was more advanced than the West had thought. There were predictions Peking soon would have the hydrogen bomb. Another sign of China's power was the failure of Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev to kick the Chinese out of world communism. When the showdown came in the communist bloc, it was Khrushchev who lost his job, not Mao Tse-tung. China continued to preach violent revolution to the underdeveloped nations and to rail against the United States. With China's encouragement, South Vietnamese communists forged ahead in their rebellion against an American-backed government. After the fall of Ngo Dinh Diem in late 1963, America hoped for better things in South Vietnam. Instead, governments and mobs came and went in Saigon. The Viet Cong strengthened their hold on the countryside and hemmed in the capital. This is Robert Crabb in Tokyo.
We'll continue our 1964 review with a look at Africa in a moment. ...1964 was a troubled year for Africa. Rhodesia fell apart. There were revolutions and riots in Zanzibar, Tanganyika, Uganda, and Kenya. The dark continent seethed with unrest and discontent, while a new group, the Organization for African Unity, tried to patch the continent together. In the Congo, the last UN troops left on June 30th, and former secessionist Premier Tshombe took over. Henri Scoop reports from Leopoldville.
When Premier Tshombe returned from exile in Europe in June, he said, "Give me 3 months and I will clean it all up." He tried to get a roundtable conference going with the rebel leaders, but failed. After many fruitless appeals, he decided to defy public opinion in the whole of Africa by using white mercenaries against the rebels. This has resulted in wholesale slaughter, and now things have gone too far for a non-violent solution to be feasible, and there seems little chance of keeping the Congo state together at all. But all the experts are agreed that here is a country in the process of committing suicide.
Early in November, the rebel forces in the Congo announced that all Americans, Belgians, and other Europeans behind rebel lines were being held as hostages. A Belgian teacher could hardly find the words to tell of his experiences when interviewed in Leopoldville.
Those rebels, told us to sit down on the road, and at a certain moment they ordered to shoot at us. Then we lay down on the ground, and some of us were killed and wounded, but the rest were safe. A few minutes later, the paratroopers came and saved us, and we were taken to the airport.
A joint American-Belgian paratroop rescue operation saved most of the captives, but not before some were shot, clubbed, or hacked to death. The violence of African political protest, led by Algeria and the United Arab Republic, and exploited by the communists, resounded in the UN and foreign offices of the world long after the hasty withdrawal of the paratroopers. Now a look at the year in brief. Other stories of importance in 1964, roughly in chronological order. Early in January, riots broke out in the Panama Canal Zone. At least 20 persons were killed when American high school students flew the Stars and Stripes without hoisting the Panamanian flag alongside. Panama suspended relations with the U.S., demanding revisions in the Canal Treaty. Diplomatic relations were restored 3 months later, but the issue remains unsettled to date. Back home, smokers got some not unexpected bad news. Cigarette smoking is not only bad for you, it can take years off your life. The Surgeon General of the United States, pipe-smoking Luther Terry, released statistics showing smokers die younger than non-smokers. Cigarette sales dropped for a few weeks. In March, Dallas nightclub owner Jack Ruby was convicted for the nationally televised murder of Lee Harvey Oswald, alleged assassin of President Kennedy. Later, the Warren Commission reported that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone in killing the young president, and that Ruby was also a loner in killing Oswald. On March 27th, an earthquake struck Alaska and isolated the 49th state for hours. As word came filtering through, the toll ran to 26 dead and 103 missing. The tidal wave spawned by the quake swept down the Pacific coast. 26 more were either dead or missing. On April 22nd, the New York World's Fair opened for a two-summer run. In June, Senator Edward Kennedy was injured in a light plane crash in Massachusetts. He spent 6 months in the hospital with a broken back. Also in June, Jim Bunning of the Philadelphia Phillies pitched a perfect game, the first in 84 years of National League Baseball. On July 16th, an off-duty policeman shot and killed a Negro youth on the streets of New York City. That weekend, thousands of Negroes poured into the streets for 5 days of rioting. Police fired thousands of rounds of ammunition into the air to control the mob. Rocks, bottles, bricks, and garbage rained down on the streets of Harlem and the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn. Before the shell casings were picked off the streets, 3 days of rioting broke out in the Negro section of Rochester in upstate New York. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania followed in suit. On July 3rd, Ranger 7, a spaceship launched from Cape Kennedy 3 days earlier, started taking pictures of the moon's surface.
10 seconds. Excellent signal strength. We're receiving pictures to the end. Impact has occurred.
It sent back thousands of clear, close-up pictures. On August 2nd, PT boats identified as North Vietnamese attacked U.S. destroyers in the Gulf of Tonkin. The next day, President Johnson gave the word to shoot back if attacked in the future. Another attack by PT boats in the Gulf brought retaliation by U.S. planes, which hit 25 PT boats and their bases in North Vietnam. The bodies of three missing civil rights workers were found August 4th in a red clay dam near Philadelphia, Mississippi, by federal agents. All three men had been shot. Another civil rights worker, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, was honored for his leadership in the nonviolent civil rights struggle. He accepted the Nobel Peace Prize for 1964 in Oslo, Norway.
I accept this award today with an abiding faith in America and an audacious faith in the future of mankind.
The 1964 Summer Olympics opened in Tokyo. Emperor Hirohito spoke the opening words. The United States came out of the Summer Olympics covered with golden honors, taking 36 first place medals, the largest gold strike in the Olympics. Fighting continued on the island of Cyprus. The Turkish Cypriot minority battled with the Greek Cypriot majority throughout the year. A UN peace force kept the squabble from becoming either a war between NATO partners Greece and Turkey, or even a world war with the threatened intervention of the communists. Closer to home, the island of Cuba continued to be a stronghold of communism in the Americas. The Cuban czar of industry, Che Guevara, came to New York in December for the UN session, which opened 3 months late because of a Soviet-American clash over Moscow's debt. Guevara's presence provoked demonstrations by Cuban exiles and the firing of a bazooka at the UN building with a near miss. In Washington, Republicans on a Senate committee kept firing at and around Bobby Baker for weeks, but apparently without hurting Democrats much. Hearings into the affairs of the wheeling-dealing former Johnson advisor will continue in 1965. In Asia, it was the year of the dragon, but in the United States, it was the year of the Beatles. The mopheads made 2 trips across the nation, collecting money and wooing screaming fans. In November, the world's teen set held its breath while Beatle drummer Ringo had his tonsils removed. He took the operation in stride. And for millions of young Americans, that was the year's big news. This has been 1964 in Review, a program produced by United Press International Audio under the direction of Scott Peters, editor Jan Gren. This is Pi Chamberlain.